Hello, welcome to Sound Healing Radio. I'm David Gibson, and we have Tom Kenyon as our guest today. Hi there, Tom.
Hey, David.
You know, what I like to do at the beginning of each show is I like to start by setting an intention. And, you know, what I was thinking is it seems like probably the best intention, considering what I know about you, is would really be about raising consciousness on the planet for ourselves.
That's a good intention.
Uh-huh. It's my impression. I'm sorry?
I can align with that.
Good, good. So let's set that for just a second with a frequency. Boy, that sure connects me. You know, it's funny, I can tell when I get connected to spirit, it's just goosebumps come in. It's just, I get tingles all over and this energy just comes flowing in from above.
That's like a circuit going on.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I've never been in one of your workshops except the International Sound Convention in San Jose. I was in that workshop where you had everybody toning their stuck energy, mm-hmm. which was very intense. It was very intense. And you know, can you just tell us a bit about, you know, what is your current mission in life? I mean, what is it you're really all about right now?
Well, what fascinates me and has been a focus of my work actually since the mid-80s is the use of sound and music as a vehicle to create altered states of consciousness. And I look at those altered states as doorways into the more creative aspects of our brain and mind. And I believe that at this juncture in human history that it's very good to be using as much of our brain potential as possible in all aspects of our intelligence and creativity. And altered states are a way to access levels of information and knowledge that we don't normally have access to. And sound and music, of course, is one of the most ancient ways of giving access to this. And what my work is about is kind of straddling two worlds, which is the world of science and neurology and what happens in the brain, because, as you know, in 1983, I formed Acoustic Brain Research to document how sound and music affect the brain. And so I work in that area of science, and I also work in the area of the mystical traditions and what they have to say about these other states of mind and where those two territories overlap, modern neurology, quantum physics, and the mystical knowledge that comes from many different traditions. I find a very rich territory that gives people a space to explore other aspects of their intelligence and their creativity. So that's really what my passion is.
Mm-hmm. You know, that brings up a couple of things. When you say altered states, when you say that word, I immediately get a little bit of fear about losing my grounding. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you don't have to lose your grounding. Well, there's several things. There's several different types of depths of altered states.
Uh-huh.
But losing one's ground is not a requirement to experience an altered state of consciousness. For instance, world-class athletes are very grounded individuals in order to do what they do. But they all describe, they have a word they call the zone. And some athletes use different terms, but the zone is described as a state where the body is completely fluid and stress-free, and all the athletes who go into this report that it's like they watch themselves from a place in their consciousness going through the action, and it's totally fluid and no stress. And they're both attending to the outer world and attending to a relaxed state of body and mind, and that's what's called mid-alpha frequency. So an altered state is that whole continuum from the relaxed state of mind where an athlete can perform at a world-class level to a very deep, profound altered state of consciousness where the yogis go into samadhi, and there's no awareness of the external world at all. Their focus is totally on the inner world. So altered states covers that entire continuum And at night when we sleep, we're in an altered state, and dreams are the result of that.
I see. No, my main experience, other than, you know, what we've been doing at the Sound Healing Institute here in San Francisco, is the work of Jeffrey Thompson, where he's done an EEG work with people in high states of meditation and then created binaural beats to, you know, re-entrain people into that same state.
Right.
Is that, so basically, do you use, mostly do you mostly use EEG as the feedback mechanisms to study it, or what are the different ways you studied it?
Well, there's 10 years. I was doing that research for 10 years, and we were primarily using EEG and galvanic skin response, blood pressure. And I don't actually do that type of research anymore. I'm now applying it in other areas of my work. But now there are technologies that look at the flow of quantum energy in the brain. They're called SQIDs. There's magnetic resonance imaging, MRIs, and PET scans. So the whole new world is opening up. How sound and music and vibration affect the brain and the nervous system at very deep levels. And certainly Jeffrey Thompson's work is brilliant. I have very high regard for it.
So it sounds like my impression is that, so you're continuing with this research, it's a large part of your life. So it sounds like, I mean, you do these, do workshops that, I mean, everybody that comes away from them says it's the most amazing transformational experience they've ever not imagined.
It is a common report, yeah.
That's actually exactly it. It's like there's no way that people could imagine how transformative they are until they've gone through it.
Right.
So it sounds like you're doing kind of a combination of both, is my impression. Is that kind of...
Yeah, because... I would say that my work now, for 10 years, I was really narrowly focused on brain research and what is actually going on in the brain, so I could understand it as a psychotherapist, because that's what this work came out of, was I started composing music for my clients to help them relax into Ericksonian hypnotic states, and I noticed that music really facilitated this, but there was very little information at this time, in the early 80s on this. So that for 10 years I was narrowly focused on the science, and then now we're 20 some years later, and it's now more of a combination of art and science. So it's an artistic expression using sound to affect people in profound ways, but it's based on science. So it's a combination of art and science, I would say, at this point.
The way we explain it, or the way I explain it at the school, all the different elements is. As I say, there are sounds, there are frequencies that are archetypal frequencies. Then there are musical intervals. Then there are changing musical intervals, which are music. And then you throw in rhythm, and that's the whole deal. And then you can add intention on top of that, and that really takes it to the whole next level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then what we do is, as far as the different... different techniques. It seems like the trick is to get your music to a level that higher energies can then come in. Because that's besides just setting an intention, when you can get higher energies, whether it's divine or whatever, to come in and then take it to the next level. That's when it really becomes amazing.
Yeah, you have a third force then. You have a third energy other than your own energy and the intention. You have another aspect, what I call it's an other dimensional aspect of yourself. And some people access it through the Christian archetypes, and some do it through the Hindu or Buddhist or indigenous peoples. Whatever aspect that's a higher octave or expression of human consciousness, whatever that is, whatever that mystery is, because it's still a mystery, when it comes in and becomes part of the equation, I agree with you that something happens profound to the expression, and it's not just music anymore. It's not just music with intention. It's another something that can affect people.
It's become really, it seems that's kind of one of the things that a lot of people would love to figure out is that formula right now. Because if we could create a formula for music, and there's so many variables because different people need different things to be able to get into that state, but if you could create a formula that would lead you to the edge and then connect to spirit, and I mean that would be the most amazing thing if we could just say, okay, this music will connect you to spirit, you know, and because we all have had that experience, and it's interesting. It would be great to get to a point where we could, you know, it would just become another tool that would get us to the point where we could do it all on our own ourselves.
Well, the formula is kind of like the Holy Grail in some ways.
Become God.
Reminds me of something that Milton Erickson, he was the person who created this type of medical hypnosis that I used in my therapy practice. Ericksonian hypnosis was a brilliant man, and he was able to create transformations for people that were amazing. He could go in and work with somebody who had been in a mental institution for their entire life and reformulate themselves and be able to function in the world. I mean, he was extraordinary. And he was interviewed by Bandler and Grinder, who are the founders of neurolinguistic programming, because they were going around to observe and document, to find the formula of excellent communicators. And he was one of them. They studied Virginia Satir and many others to find what was the element, the common element in all of these people that anyone could use to be as good as a communicator and a transformer as they were. And when they were interviewing Dr. Erickson just before he died, they asked him about this, and he said, "Ah, yes, well, they discovered the nut, but they never found the kernel." So
and
the nut is like
kernel?
A formula, the kernel, the inside of
kernel.
The nut, which is actually the mystery of life itself and growth. And what his point was that the structure, and this is what I find over and over again in my work, that the structure can help us get to a certain point.
Right.
But there's a point where structure has to be left behind, and one simply enters the mystery and allows the mystery to embody the musician, and allow that transformation to take place. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I think that a formula might help us get to some point.
Get to the jumping off point.
Where the formula just doesn't work anymore when stepped into the mystery.
It reminds me of one of the main things I've learned from a few of the classes at the Institute, because I've taken all the classes that we teach myself, and especially from a class by Richard Feather Anderson on sacred geometry, he was saying that, you know, what he does when he goes to create some major sacred geometry architecture is that he will roll things around in his brain mentally and get all of the information and just look over and over and try and figure out all the mathematics and do it as intellectually and just get it going on in his head for days and days. And then once he's got it all rolling around in his head, there often what will happen is there's this moment where the spirit comes in and says, "No, not like quite like that. Just twist it like this, and then it's perfect." So it's kind of, you know, I
know what he's talking about. Yeah.
So it's the same type of thing of getting to the jumping off point.
Yeah, and I had that experience in the early days throughout that whole 10-year period of brain research. I would work with what I knew were frequencies, what frequencies did so-and-so, but I would study all that, and at some point I would just let it all drop away, and I would intuitively create a sound pattern. And the way we worked back then, we did everything out of house. All research went to universities or independent labs so that it wouldn't be contaminated by our view or expectations, and I would put a little note with the recording that would go to the researcher and say, "I think this is what might happen." And they would write back and say, "How in God's name did you know that this sound pattern would affect the brain in this way?" And it was not a logical thing. It was an intuitive thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's what led me into being even more interested in these, what I'm calling altered states, but shifts in consciousness that allow us to see the world in a different way. And intuitive knowledge is just one aspect that we all have. All humans possess this. our culture kind of trains it out of us, but we all possess it. We all have it. And it leads us to amazing places.
The interesting thing that I've come to discover is I think it sometimes happens, but it's like Einstein didn't get his intuition just by laying around in bed. He was really thinking about it for a long time, you know.
Right.
And so that's what I've, yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, when you do the workshops with Hathors or with Mary Magdalene or various higher beings, do you go? I mean, it's my impression from what I've heard, and it's only hearsay, you know, is that you just go. You just go into spirit.
And how I would describe that as in terms of science, neurology, is that I go into a highly receptive brain state. That there's a lot of increased alpha activity and theta activity. And I just train my brain to go there. And anybody can do that. What happens then is I have an intention, because you mentioned intention earlier, is to allow these higher vibrational energies to enter through me. And I go into a very profound, for me, altered state in which I become the sound. My body becomes the sound vibration that's coming through. And people have very powerful experiences.
Is it normally just...
What happens,
Go ahead.
Well, I think part of what the reason people have profound experiences besides the energy is that I hold in my intention a space to allow people to move in profound, deep ways, because I know that everyone on the planet has greatness and everyone has immense creativity, but maybe they've had blocks in their life or experiences that don't allow that to happen. And I know from my experience in psychotherapy for over 25 years that when I create a space for somebody to explore another part of themselves, it happens. It's an extraordinary thing. When you create space for another person, something happens where they're able to move to another perspective of themselves that might not have ever taken place.
Mm-hmm. So when you're doing this work, is it, I know you work with Hathors and various higher beings, but there's also spirit energy that comes in, right?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm. So is the energy a combination of these higher beings and spirit that's really helping do the transformation, plus your background? Because that's my impression intuitively, is that you are the rock that is providing the grounding for everybody for all this higher energy to come through. And
that's
why
right.
You've been chosen is because you are such a rock.
Yeah, when you use,
tell me if
when
I'm
you use the word spirit, could you say more about how, because there's so many connotations of what that means.
Oh, as far as the rock?
No, spirit.
I just mean just a consistent energy that can hold a space and hold a frequency for other energies to come through.
Yeah, right.
With no ego, no.
Right. And the reason I'm able to do that is to go into that space is I know that ego is useless. At that level of transformation, my ego, my personal identity, is got to be transcended somehow to allow this to happen. So I'm just clear on that when I do the work. When I'm not doing the work, I have my own egoic self that's going on, for sure. But when I do the work, I'm able to transcend that part of myself. And what I become, and this comes out of my... I spent many years exploring yoga, all the paths of yoga that I could... find, and I became a Tibetan Buddhist. I was a Christian mystic. There's something called the Prajnaparamita, which means the mother of all Buddhas, which is space itself, and it's like the womb that holds all potential. And so the spirit that I am able to tap into is somewhat different depending on what tradition I'm in. Like if I'm working in the Taoist tradition, the Taoist masters come through, and their spirit, which actually the Latin root of spirit means breath, spiritus, to inspire me, is to draw in breath. So it's literally an inspiring energy that's connected to breath and subtle energy. And spirit will express itself in every tradition that I've experienced, in the yogic tradition, in the Buddha tradition, in the Christian tradition, the Islamic, indigenous. And as it expresses through those filters, it takes a slight turn or coloration that's different. So the sound patterns, for instance, that come through in different traditions will be unique to that culture. I just came back from Japan, and I just received the recordings back from Tokyo, and the scales are Asian. And it's really interesting working with the energy beings in Japan. Those scales, those energies are distinctly Japanese, but it is spirit, the same universal spirit expressing through the Japanese. And when I go to the United States and I'm working with indigenous energies, it's the same spirit, but it's coming through that channel, so to speak, of the indigenous native traditions. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh, absolutely. So if you're working with the Hathors, how do they play into the mix?
Well, the Hathors came to me, for those readers, the listeners who aren't familiar with them, they're interdimensional beings who said they were very instrumental in ancient Egypt. And when they first appeared to me, this was back in the very early 80s, I was very upset, actually. They appeared to me in a meditation retreat, and they told me who they were. And being a psychotherapist, I was a brain researcher, I was a very rational person. They told me that they were from another universe. They came in through Sirius to help with what was happening on Earth, because in their ancient civilization, they went through a transition into the fifth dimension and higher, as we are doing, they said. So I didn't have any place in my paradigm of reality for this. I thought this was, off the charts. This was like psychosis, seeing things that aren't there and hearing things that aren't there. But as I worked with them, one of the first things they imparted to me was a knowledge of sacred geometry and its relationship to sound and vibration. And the other thing that I noticed that happened was that my vocal range got wider. When they first made contact with me, my vocal range was about 3 octaves, a little bit more, and now it's about 4 octaves. And that extra octave came from literally holding their energy and expressing it vocally has changed literally the physicality of my vocal range. Looking at my vocal cords. So how they play into that, they say, and when I talk to different beings from these different traditions, they all have something different to say. Their perspective is slightly different, but they all agree on some commonality. And one of the commonalities is that this is a very important time for human consciousness and consciousness in general. But what the Hathors say is that what happens on Earth is critical for this universe, not just our little solar system, not just for our galaxy, but for the entire universe, and even the other universes. So that's, for some people,
it's not just energy, it's just especially messages that are coming through as well, that they're
right.
bringing.
So their transformation occurs through the sound, but they have started giving messages, language messages, information.
I see. So, here's the big question. What are the main things we can do to help in this raising consciousness of the planet and the transformation that we're going through?
Well, what they say is that we need to individually come to a life of joy. They said if we through the difficulties and the challenging times that we have on Earth, if each of us as individuals can make choices in our life that increase joy for ourselves and those around us, that we are doing the best thing we can for evolution of consciousness on the planet. So I love that part, that it's very practical and it's very down to earth and it's something that each of us can do. And what they do, they've given their perspective on how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's joy, and then the other thing is that they talk about the need for bliss or ecstasy as a vehicle to enter into higher states of consciousness, that the doorway for humans is through the heart, through joy, bliss, and ecstasy.
I've been doing actually both of the meditations for quite a while now. In fact, I bring them into the classes that from the Hathors. The one meditation that The first one is just imagining a double tetrahedron around your body. And
it's an octahedron.
Octahedron. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the double tetrahedron is called a star tetrahedron, and that's the Merkaba.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very powerful energy, a geometry that a lot of people actually work with. The octahedron is two square-based pyramids that are joined at the base. They point in opposite directions, and that's what they call the holon of balance.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, yes. And you know what I've noticed is, you know, we used to sleep under a pyramid, which was a little too intense from us. But, you know, whenever I've been in a pyramid, I can always hear, since, you know, my background is physics of sound, and I'm a recording engineer, and I've written the number one selling book in the world in audio for mixing. So I'm really aware of resonances and resonant frequencies, especially in rooms and any spaces. And when I'm inside a pyramid or an octahedron or any shape, I can really feel and intuit the frequency of that shape, and a frequency comes through. And so what I got was that really they're creating a frequency, a consistent frequency that helps us hold our space when anything else is, you know, falling apart around us.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been pointing out to people that another technique, I mean, this is the easiest technique there is to imagine the octahedron, you know, but if you can also get into a place where you can hold a frequency through toning or through any, or just even getting on the sound table or getting into that frequency, that can really hold that space as well.
Yeah, those are excellent ways, because if once a person finds it, different people will find different frequencies or styles of music or sound patterns enjoyable. And one person will find one frequency or sound pattern really wonderful, and another person will say, oh, I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
And so the research in music therapy shows that the person needs to like what it is. But I agree with you. If a person finds something that they listen to that makes them feel good, they can recreate that whenever they wish, simply by remembering the sound and the feeling. And
right.
It's a wonderful centering device. Very,
yeah.
Very powerful, simple thing to do.
Yeah, that's why toning is really so wonderful, because it can bring that frequency in. Or also, if you've got a sound table, you can get on the sound table. You know, there's also one thing that I've been working on is a 3D virtual reality system. I mean, I've got a system right now that I used in my book of the Art of Mixing book, where I represent each sound between the speakers by a sphere or a bubble. And I've got it working in 3D, where the sounds are floating between the speakers, and you can reach up with a data glove ultimately and grab the sounds and throw them around the room in surround sound in virtual reality. So I'm working on a system right now so you can have a virtual reality image of your own body and be able to take a sound and put it inside an image of an organ or endocrine gland or muscle or chakra, and then it will move that sound up and down on the sound table until you feel it inside your body. And so what I've been thinking, besides this system, is to then have a virtual reality octahedron around you. It can help you. It's a way of training you into this to a point where you can easily visualize it anytime you want.
Yeah, anything that can help people train their brain, their nervous system, the consciousness to attain something is great, because once they've learned it, then they can recreate it at will, and they don't need the technology, but the technology is a wonderful vehicle to get to that point. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. The other technique that I just love, that I use in class a lot, is the technique of focusing on your heart and having gratitude and appreciation for your physical heart, and then getting into that field. And what I do in the classes, I'll have people even make the sound of that feeling once they've actually gotten there. It just makes me so happy.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Manfred Kleins and Synthetic Waves.
Yeah, he's been at the Institute.
Yeah, his work is brilliant and, you know, looks right at the mathematical ratios of the waveforms of gratitude, appreciation, and those major emotions, coherent emotions.
So, you know, I've got one question that's an interesting question because that I've been bantering about with different instructors, and that is, you know, I've been feeling, I mean, in the field of sound healing, I think of it as two different components. One is healing issues or things that you have going on, and the other area is raising your consciousness and connecting to spirit. And I've gotten to the point, especially as we're accelerating into higher consciousness, into higher levels, that if you can just connect to spirit and basically I point out that raising your consciousness is really the best example of that is just being in joy and gratitude and appreciation. That is raising your consciousness. So I've been thinking instead of working on healing diseases and replacing the pharmaceuticals with sound, you know, that maybe the whole focus should be on just raising the consciousness and connecting the spirit, and then that will basically, in a way, burn through the other stuff. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think ultimately that's true. I was having a conversation with Candace Blakely, who's a very talented, gifted, subtle energy healer, and she was saying that in her experience working with people with terminal illnesses and when they turn it around, that she could sit down with somebody and have a cup of coffee and a cigarette and cause a disease to go into remission if the intention was strong enough, if the clarity was strong enough. But that doesn't work with everyone. So it's like some people can shift into that state of high coherency of gratitude and appreciation, and the vibrational energy of that bathes the body because, you know, as you know, the physical heart, the electromagnetic waveforms of the heart are 30 to 60 times stronger than the electromagnetic fields of the brain, and they extend out at least 50 feet. So the entire physical body, every cell of our body is affected by the electromagnetic waves generated by the physical heart. And we know now through work of Heart Math Institute, Dan Winter and some others, that the heart, physical heart actually shows the harmonics are affected by emotions like gratitude and appreciation. And so when a person experiences that appreciation and gratitude, there is a science that explains how the cells go into a higher state of resonance. And yes, it's my experience that when those cells can hold that frequency high enough, long enough, that disease, many diseases can be affected and resolved, but not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So some people need to have like the sounds that can actually affect cellular processes, and some people need a pharmaceutical, and some people need somebody to talk to and process their issues so they can get through what the issues are. And some people need down to the genetic level. So there's all these different levels that have their place, the right thing to use. Ultimately, I agree with you, yes, if we could all enter into a hold a vibrational state long enough and with such clarity, we could dispense with a lot of things we're doing. But not everybody can do that.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing at the World Sound Healing Conference that we're holding? You're going to be doing a keynote presentation, and then you've got a one-day workshop on May 15th. The conference, by the way, for those of you that don't know, is coming up on May 11th through the 14th, and there still are tickets available. And we've got also, the other thing is, before we get to it, we've also got four concerts that are going on with the conference. And on Friday night, we've got Mickey Hart and Stanley Jordan. God, we've got a group called AO that brings in 30 children. And then we've got a 20-piece choir and a violin section, Japanese taiko drums, drummers, and the mother drum, which is a 7-foot grandmother drum with 200 crystals inside, and then we've got 3D visuals with of sacred geometry in 3D with 3D glasses. And I wanted to, you know, also, I mean, still there's still a possibility that, you know, we might be able to get you to come in and play something there as well, or join us somehow.
Great.
What will you be doing on the workshop on Monday? It's Monday, May 15th. Tell us about what people can expect in that workshop.
You mean during my keynote?
Well, both. Yeah, first in the keynote, and then in your all day workshop.
On the keynote, I'm going to present a basic understanding that I hope will be easy to understand by the layperson who has no, you know, background in this, but also informative enough for a sound healer to be significant. And I'm going to use, I was asked to write a medical paper for an oncology society in Vienna, Austria, which I just completed, and it's a documentation, 7 different independent studies from hospitals and universities around the world on music therapy and its effect on cancer.
On what therapy?
On effects on music therapy and the effect on cancer with cancer patients. And it's very positive. And I'm going to look at the scientific reason why this works, why music and sound can have a positive impact on cancer, and explain some of the brain mechanisms, the physiology, but again in a layperson-friendly way. And I'm going to... what the studies looked at were the use of what we call passive therapy, where a person listens to pre-recorded music that has specific rhythm and timbre and tonal quality. And the other, so I'm going to play something that I recorded for that purpose that people can hear. It's a brief section. And then I'm going to go into a demonstration of sound healing. So like the last 20 minutes or so of my presentation will be a group sound healing experience where I use shamanic drums and crystal bowls and Tibetan instruments to create a sound field for people to explore healing within themselves. So that's going to be what I'm going to be doing during the keynote.
Cool. Before you go on, you know, when you do that experience, I assume it's going to be something similar to the one that was in San Jose, which is an intense experience because everybody's making the sound of pain and relief.
Well, no, I'm not doing that version of it. See, there's sound healing in terms of vocalization is can either be where a person vocalizes something in themselves and use their own voice, or they can hear toning and take it in. So in this demonstration, I'm going to just be doing the toning of the person. There will be no vocalization from the group. That will be later in the one day.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, there was something that happened at our school, because we've got a couple of instructors that do toning of stuck energy and toning to release pain as well. And we ran into a problem. I work with a woman named Morgana Weiss who works with, actually goes inside the body and takes out stuck energy. And she said that we actually opened up a vortex of negative energy because we didn't hold the space enough around for that all that energy to be released. You know what I mean? That can be very tricky to get a large group of people. Not tricky, but there's definite work you have to do to not create a vortex.
No, I agree with that. Part of it is that when the energy, stuck energy, leaves, if you don't bring something in of a coherent nature abhors a vacuum, and some negativity can come back in, or the negative that's there can expand in that area of the body. So when I do that type of work, I follow it with toning where there's coherent energy that I'm directing that people can draw into that space. So it's a combination of release and then balancing.
Would you recommend? I've been recommending that for just individuals doing that type of releasing as well.
Right. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. because, God, you know, if people could just learn how to release stuck emotions, I mean, a lot of people say that 50% of disease is just stuck emotions.
Yeah, the percentages vary who says it, but yeah, there's a growing consensus that unexpressed emotions affect neuropeptides and neurotransmitters and all types of negative consequences in terms of health come out as a result of that.
You know, also, at the beginning of the show, we just booked Master Shaw to do the opening
mm-hmm.
ceremony of the whole conference.
Oh, great.
And I've heard you've done a little work with him.
Yeah, yes. I know Master Shaw. He's great. He's very talented, very gifted healer from the Taoist tradition.
We've been on his phone calls for about a year and a half now, and I've been checking out. So then what's going to be happening in your one-day workshop?
Well, I'm going to be taking people into shamanic journeying from two different perspectives. So the first part of the day will be exploring how sound can create altered states, how they can use sound themselves to create these receptive states. And then I'm going to explain shamanic journeying from two perspectives, the shamanic indigenous understanding and from the psychological transpersonal understanding. And those two ways of viewing have a very, again, I like those overlaps of understanding because there's rich territory that comes out of that. And so a person can enter into the experience believing and understanding that they are, in fact, going down into the underworld. Or if they're not comfortable with that paradigm, they can say, okay, I'm going down into my unconscious. But what's important is the journey through, whether it's the underworld or your unconscious, to draw power to yourself, whether psychological power or power from other dimensions of consciousness. So these two ways of describing the journey are different, but the outcome is that a person will leave that day feeling stronger and wholer and also have an understanding of how to use sound to facilitate their growth in the future. That's what I'm looking at.
What are some of the main sound techniques you use in your work?
During shamanic journey?
Just in general.
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. I use the drum a lot because, as we know, any repetitive pattern affects the RAS, the reticular activating system that's in the brainstem, and that in turn stimulates the neocortex and the rest of the brain to go into a receptive state depending upon what rhythm you're using. So in the documentation in neurology is clear that certain rhythm patterns do affect brain state, EEG activity. So sometimes I use a drum and my voice because of that repetitive pattern. Sometimes I use a crystal ball and create sound envelopes that I use with the bowl. And so it really depends upon the context of what I'm doing at the time as to what instrument I use.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that people have a root frequency, a soul frequency that is their own?
Well, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that, I know, in the sound field. And so I would say for me the verdict is out because I think the term needs to be defined more for me to be comfortable with saying that.
Uh-huh.
What exactly does it mean, and what type of frequency are we talking about? I do think that there are, for instance, the work of Sherry Edwards, where the missing frequency in a person's voice, and Jeffrey Thompson's work, those are precise statements that I can get behind. When we talk about a root frequency in terms of a soul essence, that may be true, but I'd have to have, you know, it has to be defined in a way that then we can measure it, and I don't know how that could be measured. So intuitively, that may be true, but for me personally, the verdict is out as to whether we all have a single root frequency.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. So you'd be doing transpersonal and shamanic. Oh, what is it you would be doing in your, you've got a workshop coming up in July in Seattle.
Right.
And what will you be doing in that workshop?
Well, that's a Hathor workshop called the Creatrix.
Uh-huh.
And what they are imparting is the knowledge of how to enter into and increase dimensionality in the brain, how to become aware of other dimensions of consciousness, and it uses sacred geometry and sound. And then on the culmination of it is on Sunday, there's something they're calling the Planetary Creatrix, where we use what we have learned in those very intensive all-day Friday, all-day Saturday, those techniques to go into another state of consciousness where we can affect things differently than we normally can, and to bring in spiritual energy, spiritual light into the earth itself. And there are thousands of people around the world that will be tuning in at that exact moment to do the same work. So they set up this, on our website, they set up this planetary creatrix, and people, their message is being, where they give the technology of how one can do this if they can't be at the workshop. It's being translated. It's already been translated into Spanish 3 times by people just doing it on their own and sending it to us, and it's been translated into German and French. And so there's an entire global community that is forming around the Planetary Creatrix, which is the bringing of spiritual light into the earth as an antidote to the destructiveness that is going on all around us. So it's very interesting. Event in that for the first part of it, we will be learning techniques to affect what they call three-dimensional reality from a higher state of consciousness. And what they mean by that is that, back in the 20s, I don't remember the name of the mathematician who wrote this book, but it's called The Flatlanders. And it was basically a story about a civilization that was 2 dimensions only, width and length. They didn't have a third dimension. And then one day, their world encountered a sphere, something from a third dimension. And what happened was, in their world, how the sphere appeared was a point, and as the sphere passed through it, a point became a larger and larger circle, and became a very large circle, and then it started to shrink again, come back to a point. So their experience of an encounter with a third-dimensional object was a two-dimensional experience of a point to a circle and back to a point. And in the story, many experts form, and they have these theories about actually what happened, and of course they're all wrong, because they could never conceive of a sphere, because it's outside of their dimensionality. So what the Hathors say is that one of the ways to affect or manifest things in our life is to go outside of time and space and kind of look back at our world and our life from another perspective, and then another dimension of consciousness, and that we can affect things. Like we can look at a surface of a desk and reach down with our hand and pick up a pencil. So the techniques that are being explored in Friday and Saturday are training protocols, if you will, that a person can take home and continue to develop their capacity to be aware of other dimensions of their own consciousness. And when a person has a mastery of that, then they can come back and deal with their life in a very creative way that they could not before, or I would say in a different manner than if you don't have access to other dimensions of your own consciousness. And then Sunday, we'll be taking all of that and being in service to the planet.
When you say in service to the planet, is that to humanity or the Earth or both?
Well, it's both, but you know, Earth is going to be fine. Earth will survive, humanity might not. Earth is going to go through some changes, but you know, at this point, we are really parasites. We're not symbiotes. And, you know, symbiosis is when you give something back to the host. We give nothing back to Earth. We just take. We're destroying.
Uh-huh.
So Earth may, you know, shake us off if we don't make some changes. But Earth itself will survive, but humanity may not.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the energy, the influx of spiritual energy, does go into the Earth itself, and is of a benefit, hopefully, to help all of us wake up to the sacredness of this moment of our life and not be continually just taking and taking.
How does love play into it?
love is a very, you know, the Greeks had three different words for it, which is, I think was very insightful. We have eros, which is erotic love, and we have philios, which is the love between two people, and agape, which is divine love. And as humans, we have all three aspects. And love is a very important part of all of the entire equation. But depending upon which aspect of love we're talking about, it has a different, I don't know how we put it, a different way of approaching it. But love is very crucial to the entire thing because love is the glue that holds it all together. The Hathors say that if when you go into these states of bliss that they're suggesting people enter into, that you realize the entire world, the entire cosmos, is in a state of love and happiness. When you get at the subtle level of things, what they call the interdimensional aspects.
Mm-hmm. One thing that that I've realized is that if we could all get to the point where we know that we are all one, that it's a lot of it's done. And what's interesting is there, if you look around, there are really hardly any techniques that I've come across that really bring you to that state or get you there. I mean, in fact, toning with a group of people is probably the closest that I've seen of a technique to get to that place, because that silence after you've toned with a group of people, I mean, that shared silence is just, you are all in the same space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
So I've been looking at, you know, ways to, because, you know, I've had glimpses of being one with people, and I've started actually polling people in groups whenever I have a large group of people and asking them, you know, how many of you often have feelings of or knowing of being one with everyone? Because, you know, mentally I can do it, but, you know, it's not like I can go into that place very often at all. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about how to get there?
Well, there is something that, what the technique that the Hathors, well, first of all, I agree with you, toning, group toning, what I call harmonic choir, where everybody's toning together in a coherent way, when that's done and they stop, there's this interconnectedness that's palpable, that's vividly real.
Yeah.
What the Hathors say is that one of the things they are asking people to do in preparation for the planetary creatrix that they're going to participate is to be able to go into a state of gratitude, appreciation, while focusing on the physical heart. And that creates a response in the body that the whole body basically goes into a state of pleasure, heightened awareness, and if that goes a little further, it becomes love. It becomes a feeling of being connected to all of life. And so I think love, that may be what you're talking about, is this distinct emotional, mental understanding that we're all connected,
uh-huh.
that we're connected to all life. Is that accurate? Is that what you're saying when you say love?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because I've been working on a play for Las Vegas and actually for Moscow, Russia, with some guys, one of the main guys from Cirque du Soleil, and the play is called Compassion. So I've really been delving into compassion, the meaning of compassion in detail. And in fact, in this play, what happens is the Earth character falls in love with the Queen of the Elements, and she gets killed. And he has to have compassion for her. And in order to do that, I came up with about five different ways, just from studying with the Dalai Lama and a lot of different just talking with people and also my own intuition. One is to just understand how that person came to be or to do evil deeds or have the greed they have. One is understanding. One is seeing the child or baby in that person, seeing that person as a baby in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Another is, as far as the compassion is realizing that anything other than compassion, I mean revenge, is just going to make it worse for yourself and everybody.
Yeah. Right.
And then the last one is that you realize you're all one. And in the play, at that point, it becomes 3D, and the spheres of light that are inside this person, or sphere of light inside this person, melds with the Earth character so that they all become one. And then all of the spheres from everybody in the audience, we see an image of them coming out of everybody in the audience and joining together.
Oh, wow.
In 3D.
That's quite a scene. That's great.
So I wonder, so when you talk about love as being all one, I think of that as compassion, but you know, then it makes me think, what is really the difference between love, all oneness, and compassion?
Well, that's the question of the ages. in our language,
like, compassion is kind of like an act towards others that comes out of the knowledge of that love and oneness. Because love, I always think of love as just a frequency, whereas oneness is just is more of just we are.
Yeah, it's an understanding. Oneness is an understanding, a recognition. In our language, the English language, the root of compassion is compassionare, which is Latin, which means to feel with. So when we have compassion for somebody, it's not feeling sorry for, but to feel with them. And the difference between, for me, it was very interesting, the difference between compassion and doing a compassionate act came out of a conversation I had with abbotess of a nunnery in Tibet. Her name's Gyatsang, remarkable woman. And basically what I came to understand through her was that compassion is the witnessing, loving witness, the action of doing something in the world through love is loving kindness. Mm-hmm. So when one is feeling compassion, one doesn't have to do anything. One is simply a witness to whatever it is, without judgment, to feel with that person or that situation, whatever it is, then one is in compassion. And when one feels moved to actually do something in the world, that becomes loving kindness. I thought that was a very wonderful distinction.
Mm. Mm. That's great. What do you do as far as your own meditation daily?
It's based on my mood. I started meditating when I was 18 years old. I had a spontaneous samadhi experience when I was 18, and then that started me on the road to finding out what this was that I experienced, that there was no description of it in my culture. So I had to go search far and wide, and led me into the East. And so I've practiced different meditation techniques from every lineage that I've studied, and it depends. Someday I will do a Buddhist practice, and some days I will do a yogic practice, and some days I will do sound, and some days I'll just be in communion with my spirit, and it really depends on what I feel like. But I have to do something like that every day, pretty much, in order to keep myself in touch with myself, because everything is so sped up upon our little planet here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do every day?
You know, I do aerobics every morning.
Yeah.
But what I do is I do energy work where there's a couple of songs that I play where I connect to spirit. And, you know, while I'm doing the aerobics, I've always actually felt the energy coming off the back of my back, over the back of my neck, over my head, and curving over, like the kind of like the reverse banana thing that that the Hathors talk about. And then, you know, after I read about visualizing this kind of S-curve through your body, like I started adding that to it. So while I'm doing the aerobics, I move energy over the back of my head, over and then back behind me, you know, behind my feet. So I'm moving energy up and down. And,
oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, it's interesting because you know, I actually once, I've had like over, probably a couple of hundred of them now. I was actually teaching this person how to fly in the dream, and I taught them to how to do it by bringing energy up from the back of the neck over the top of the head and curving over.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
It was great. You know, what I just want to thank you for the work you're doing in this world. It's
really
wonderful, and it's just thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. We're all contributing something from our own perspectives, and we'll have a big party when it's all over, I hope, and we'll be back.
Cool.
Well, we'll see you before you know pretty soon in San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. I look forward to it. Cool.
So is there anything else we should talk about, or?
I guess, is there anything else that you wanted to, because we're still being recorded. Is there anything else that you wanted to?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, we'll just continue with this intention of raising consciousness on the planet into the evening, into the weekend, and through, at least through next week, hopefully through the months and years. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Good evening. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.